right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are, for some reason, in the year 2026, we're having to actually argue against communists. It's crazy. Represents an absolute abysmal failure of our intellectual class to teach our values and morals to other people, as well as the inevitable and oft-predicted outcome of our open border third world refugee refuse receivement plan. Not sure what other outcome we were expecting from all of this, but we've got another one of our ingrates. Maybe that's what we can just call him. I actually kind of like that. I hadn't thought about that yet. So Zoran Mamdani is like, thinks, you know, he's like mad that Americans call ingrateful people ingrates. That's a good word. Like, we use all these words. Immigrants, you know, illegal immigrants. Just call them ingrates. How about the ingrates? Okay. So we've got another ingrate here. Another newly arrived ingrate. And the thing is, the disconnect is so deep between us. We're not even really speaking the same language. To me, gratitude is an act of decency, right? To him, gratitude is an act of submission. See, when we give somebody something, we don't necessarily expect gratitude, but it would be nice if we got some gratitude, right? You don't do something because you want the gratitude. You understand what I mean? It's happened to me recently. I can't remember what it was. Maybe with my kids or something. But, you know, it's like you don't have to say thank you, but it's polite. It's nice. It lets you know that you're telling that person, hey, you didn't have to do this, but you did, and I appreciate it. And that's all we're asking. But to Zoran Mamdani, that's like submission or something. It's like a threat. It's like you have to be grateful for what we gave you. It's like, no, you would be a decent person to be grateful for what we gave you. The fact that you're not grateful isn't you like standing up to white supremacy. It's you just being ungrateful. It's you just being a bad person and not appreciative of what you've been given but don't deserve, what you didn't earn and yet have possession of. You just should be grateful. But like, this is the thing. I don't even know if he can conceive of it like that. Like, do you understand what I mean by the disconnect here? That, like, to me, somebody whose family like sought refuge here and was given citizenship and given all of the rights of Americans despite doing nothing to earn that position and being mayor of New York after just a year, you should be grateful. You should be great. Not to me, like, I didn't give you anything. But to America, absolutely, you should be grateful. Just like I'm grateful to it. This is the difference. I am grateful to America when it's my family that built it. It's my ancestors that created the thing that I appreciate. You come here to something that your ancestors didn't create, that you didn't inherit, but rather have been grafted into, have wormed your way into, and you don't have appreciation. You don't have gratefulness. You are not thankful for what you've been given. Like, that's just, you're just a bad person. You're just an indecent, bad, rude, ingrate. You're an ingrate. And the only lesson we need to have is like, stop giving them things. Stop giving them things. We need to stop being so gracious. We need to stop being so generous. They don't see it that way. And this is the big difference. If you give me something that I don't deserve, I'm grateful to you. And I appreciate it. If you give something to Zoran Mamdani, in his little foreigner pea brain, he thinks he earned it. He thinks he either tricked you out of it or deserves it, and you had to give it to him, which is why he has it now. He's actually not grateful. He actually does not appreciate the fact that he didn't deserve the thing he's been given. In his mind, he has it now. He must have earned it. He got it. That must be because, you know, you're too stupid to keep it. The ungratefulness, the ingrate attitude points to a much, much deeper sociological issue that these people have, that they're bad people.
Fellow Americans, I'm back. The Nixon 28 collection is now available, and I must say, it looks tremendous. Go to the AliceJonesStore.com and pick yours up today. You'll be glad you did.
Ultimate Power Drink Mix. The fantasy is real, and it's delicious. Visit the alexjonesstore.com today.
All right, folks, welcome back. Welcome back to the Ingrate Parade. We go from one foreign new arrival. And again, if this sounds harsh, you got to understand, the way I literally think about this is like a family. Like, there's somebody that has come into our house, told me my family is evil, and that the only way my family will be cured is if, you know, he gets to run it from now on. The chutzpah, the ingratitude. We have to stop these people. We have to stop these people. And again, it's not just, it's like on every level, right? On the moral level, on the strategic level, everything they think is wrong and is dangerous and is destructive to the world that we all want to live in. They're just too stupid or greedy or small-minded to understand that. So again, I'm sick of having this setup where we have to constantly defend our country against people that just aren't us, don't like us, don't have any appreciation. This is the absurd part about, like, we're a creedal nation. Really? So people who don't believe in America, do we kick them out? Oh, no, they're more American than I am all of a sudden. How does that work? If you're a nation, what does that mean? What does a nation mean? It either means people connected by shared history and genetics and birth. And I would include, you know, various people groups in that, but people groups that have spent long enough together and have, you know, both created a civilization that serves both of them, they can be a nation. Again, it's not necessarily a racial thing. For all of time, it has been a racial thing. America bent that a little bit, but that doesn't mean we're suddenly a creedal nation. If we were, then we could eject people like Zoran Mamdani. So if we're not a creedal nation and we're not a nation by race, then I guess we're not a nation. So we have to, for some reason, allow a bunch of weirdos from other nations, often citizens of other countries, come here and dictate to our family who we are, why we're bad, and why we need to be more like them. When at the end of all of it, when at the end of absolutely everything, every single time their system is actually tangibly, provably, with evidence, worse in every possible way. What the hell? What the hell are we doing? Like, none of this is speculative. None of this is speculation. Their ideas are always bad. They always go badly. They never even do the thing that they're supposed to do, even when they have the entire government apparatus at their disposal to achieve it. It never works because it's incompatible with reality. Why do we have to argue this? Why are we having to argue this? You know, my kids don't have to constantly defend their position as my children, right? My wife doesn't have to constantly fight back against an endless deluge, constantly trying to prove herself worthy of being my wife because other people are coming in and saying, actually, I think I'm better as her wife. And I'm going, oh, well, maybe I'll just go with her. Like, what is this? Why do we have to constantly defend against these people trying to invade our country? I get it. That's just the way the world is. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance. But, like, where's the vigilance? I don't have the ability to stop immigrants from coming in. I don't have the ability to do what needs to be done. The government does. They're not doing it. Why not? This really is the problem. And of course, you know, we've been over it before. Pro-immigrant message for America's 250th anniversary. We've been over it, you know, a million times. All of these concepts, all of them. Let's go to this video. Video number three here. This is the newest Democrat ingrate from Colorado, Melat Quiros, going through her policy proposals as a, you know, communist. Let's watch.
I want to quote something that you said during a speech in mid-May obviously before your victory, about the basics of your ideology. I want to dig into it a little bit with you. You said every single issue that I looked at where we thought there was a problem that was persisting, we already figured out the solution a long time ago. You solve homelessness by giving people housing. You solve hunger by giving people food. You solve health care by going to a single payer system.
Wow. No, well, let's pause it. Let's pause it right there. Why hadn't we thought of that? Thank goodness we have these ingrates, these foreign ingrates here to explain to us the obvious. I mean, my God, we never thought about this. The problem with homelessness is people don't have homes. Duh. No, Joe, for a long time I was thinking about me. I could never get it as funny enough to make the skit, actually. But it was always hilarious to me, the idea of like the socialist superhero, where it's like there's some big problem that's like a catastrophe. It's like, really, it's like, oh my God, there's all these poor people are starving to death. What do we do? And the social superheroes comes up and is just like, give them food, and then flies away. And it's like, no, we know. Like, what are you talking? What are you? You're not helping. This isn't helping. And it's just like, the socialist superhero solves everything. Everybody's poor. What do? Give them money. Everybody's like, wow, you're amazing. I can never get the punchline down. But this is it. This is the punchline. The punchline is the destruction of our country, I guess. Very funny. But like that, it's like, this is what I mean. This is what we're having to argue. This play school level wish list fantasy birthday candle level political ideology we're actually having to like contend with. And I have to actually try to explain to you why give homeless people homes is not actually a government policy, is not actually a proposal, doesn't actually mean anything, is just the ramblings of a kindergartner. And this person got elected to office in America. Her solution to homelessness is give them homes. Retarded ingrates. Like, what are we doing here? You know, the problem with poor people is they don't have money. Maybe we should give them money. My God. And they're like, oh, this woman is brilliant. We never thought about this. Give poor people money. Give homeless people homes. Society is solved. We did it. Are you kidding me? This is what I refuse to actually explain why this is wrong. I refuse. If you can't understand why give poor people money is not anything, it's not a policy, it's nothing. Like, do I have to explain it to you? Are you a child? Are you in preschool? I bet my 5-year-old would understand this. Maybe not. Maybe I could ask him. Maybe I'll do that this weekend. We'll see if we can go over some very basic, you know, ideas with children. See if they understand more than this 20-year-old ingrate does. Okay, so the other ingrate interviewing her, I guess is from Canada. I don't know. It's hard for me to listen because his eyes are so beady. It's like, if you want, like, look at the guy's eyes. They, you know, if you've ever been like, what do beady eyes look like? It's like, this is the dictionary definition of a beady-eyed man. And so I have trouble listening to him. I feel like I get hypnotized by his tiny little eyes. So sorry, back to the beady-eyed man and the ingrate.
Like every other developed country has universal health care. But tell me about this, because there are some who would paint you and other DSA members as radicals. You're trying to make the argument that
idiots,
this is
not radicals,
sense.
Idiots.
It is common sense, right? If you look at the data, if you look at the research, it is cheaper to house someone than to leave them homeless.
Pause.
It
is cheap. Pause right there. How is it cheaper to house somebody than leave them homeless? Feel the need to expand on that? Option A, you buy a home. Option B, you don't buy that home. You're saying this one is cheaper? I'd like for you to explain that. See, on the face of it, that's a very ridiculous thing to say. I guess they're saying that, like, health care, addressing housing directly is cheaper than relying on cops and emergency rooms. And it's like, what do you think happens when somebody gets a home? Why do you think they're going to the emergency room or having the cops called on them? It's not because they're sleeping rough. It's because they're doing drugs or committing violence or causing trouble of some sort. That continues. It'll just now happen in a government-sponsored hostel, I guess. Great. But it would be absurd on the face of it if it was as simple as you're going to pay for a $10,000 hut for the person. But in California, every time there's some sort of breakdown about housing homeless, like monetary breakdown of where the money goes, routinely you see that to house a homeless person for a single year cost $250,000 somehow. Somehow. So like if it was just, you know, at cost, it still would be wrong. But guys, bring up like just some of the breakdowns of just like, you know, California paid $500 million to house 35 people. Like, it's crazy how much money it costs to house a homeless person because of all the grifting and fraud and taking advantage of it that the NGOs do. And at the end of the day, unless you actually have... So there is a way to do this that's effective. There is a way to do this that can actually work. There's actually a program here in Austin that does it. I believe it's called Mobile Loaves and Fishes, but they have a tiny house community where they will give homeless people a home, but only if the homeless people can prove that they're not on drugs, can prove that they, you know, actually deserve the home. And then they're required to upkeep it. They're required to not trash it, not misbehave. And if they do, they get kicked out. This gives them a sense of ownership and a sense of belonging and a sense of responsibility. And if they can maintain it, it's been shown to be very effective. It's a Christian charity that isn't sponsored by the government. The government will spend $100,000 to book a homeless person a hotel room that costs $10,000, and then they pocket the rest of the money, provide absolutely no oversight, because that would be mean. That would be mean to require them to not do drugs. California has allocated roughly $24 billion over the last 5 years to combat homelessness. Oh, and what's happened? It's doubled. What is it? Despite these generational investments, unhoused populations have still grown, prompting criticism over a perceived lack of centralized accountability and long-term measurable outcomes. To track how funds are used across specific regions, you can follow the California Department of Housing and Community Development dashboard. I mean, we've covered the stories as they broke, and like routinely it comes out where it's just like, yeah, they spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to house a single person. It is a giant scam. So this is what I mean with socialism. It's like, yes, you can point to the litany of historical examples, the endless examples of times where this exact ideology has been implemented and it has failed abysmally. Or you can just look at the actual proposals that they're setting forward and look at where they've been implemented in the last few years in the United States. And every single thing they try is an abysmal failure. There's no outlier. There's absolutely nothing where it's like, well, you know, the socialists got elected and I don't see homeless people anymore. Like, can you imagine? Can you imagine a world where that actually happened? It does. Why doesn't that exist? Why doesn't it exist with these countries or cities in America that are fully 100% far left? Why are they the worst cities in the country every single time? Explain that to me. And again, I am a person who goes by the evidence. I don't actually have some sort of like, I don't know, superstitious fear of government programs. If I one day looked around and went, you know, there used to be homeless people all around here. I remember this park being filthy. Like, I haven't even thought about it, but I haven't seen a homeless person in weeks now. And somebody went, well, you know, it's because the government instituted the homelessness program. Then I'd be like, great, let's keep that program going. Right. If it works, I'll do it. I'm all for it. If we can spend, you know, $3 million and not have any homeless people, like, that's great. When you spend $28 billion and get more homeless people, why are you still doing that? What is your problem? What is wrong with you? Why do I have to live with you? And why do you have a say in our governance? What are we doing? This isn't a matter of opinion. This isn't a matter of perspective, ideology, political bent. This is a matter of basic mathematical reality. This is a matter of cause and effect, of policy and outcome. You do the policy, everything gets worse. Stop doing that policy. That's my mindset. That's where I'm at. That's my crazy reactionary right-wing extremism. If the thing is intended to get rid of homeless people and instead it doubles homeless people, that's a bad thing that shouldn't be implemented anymore. If it's a thing that's meant to get homeless people housing and it gets homeless people housing and is effective and efficient, I'm all for it. I'm not against it. I'm against being retarded. I'm against spending money on things that make everything worse. I'm against ingrates with dumbass ideas that always fail and are actively failing as we speak. Again, what is wrong with them? What do we do about this? It's like the drug stuff in Oregon. We covered the story earlier this week, I think it was, where it's like they're giving each other awards because it's like we have caused the overdose deaths to, you know, be limited by 50%. And it's like, yeah, but it was only up 100% because you legalized drugs 2 years ago. So like 2 years ago, they legalized drugs. Everything gets so much worse, just like we all said it would. And then they reverse it back and then they take the credit as if they're the ones that did the great thing in reversing it. It's like, no, you were the wrong ones for undoing it in the first place. You were the ones who were stupid and wrong and bad at your job for legalizing drugs in the first place. But like, it just never seems to get through to them. An Oregon Health Audit Authority reported that overdose deaths dropped in 2024 and likely continue to fall in 2025. The reason why is not precisely clear. Every time, every single time. And they just don't learn. They don't care. You tell me. You tell me why. The only things I can figure out is like they are just that dumb or they deliberately want to destroy the country. What other option is there? Like, that's it. Those are the answers. Let's go back to the ingrate. I think there were only a couple seconds.
And give them treatment that it is to let them get sick and to deal with getting the last minute, you know, excruciating treatment at the very end of their sickness. It is cheaper to give our kids the highest quality education and give them the opportunity to thrive with the best opportunities in their futures. All of these things not only pay for themselves, not only are pragmatic and economic, you know, it's just also the right thing to do, right?
No. Wrong. Next question. Once again, I'll say the right thing to do is not take other people's money to facilitate the drug addiction of your homeless population. That's actually not the right thing to do. That is the wrong thing to do. You could say it has the right intentions, but if my intention is to cook a delicious meal and I burn the house down, it doesn't really matter what my intention was. The effect of my action is ruinous and horrifying. Let's go to clip number 5 here. This was posted with the title, Media Figures Rushed to Fact Check Trump by Insisting that Democrat Socialists Were Not Communists. They're absolutely not communists, and how dare you say so? Only if you ask their leadership, they're pretty unabashed about their communist leadings. So as we watch this collection of leaders in the Democrat Socialists of America admitting that they obviously are just communist Trojan horse trying to fully undermine this entire country from the ground up, pay attention to how sickly and freakish they all look, okay? Let's go to clip number 5 now.
I am a communist, you know, and, you know, this is what I want to fight for.
As a communist who does, you know, pro-Palestine organizing.
I mean, our goal is liberation. Our goal is communism.
I think we can transform DSA into a revolutionary and practical organization.
We are revolutionary socialists who believe in the working class and believe that it is in desperate need of a revolution and thus needs a workers' party with an internationalist and anti-imperialist purview. And we believe that DSA is the best method to achieve this.
At the end of the day, like, yeah, we're in DSA because we believe that DSA, whatever it is, can be the vehicle for socialism here.
I think DSA has retreated on abolition somewhat. Like 5 years ago, we had Zeron tweeting, queer liberation means defund the police.
The type of Trotskyism I adhere to, and I think the type of Trotskyism Trotsky actually argued, it says we recognize these problems and we defend them anyway.
We must be willing to meet the challenge of building a member-driven mass organization that can harness the revolutionary potential of the working class.
I first joined DSA at the end of 2021. So when I came into the U.S. for grad school, I got involved in Students for Justice in Palestine. And then after I graduated, I organized in the New Haven community.
And that internationalism is key to change for us as socialism here in the United States because it helps us see what's possible.
DSA has remained one of the only coherent poles of resistance to both fascism and capital in the United States. We are only going to build ourselves into a fighting party by ensuring that our electoral work and our independent working class organizing are working in concert and are strengthening each other.
We are fighting to dismantle like these policing structures, but ultimately we have to be ready to take control of our neighborhoods, to fight for our neighbors.
If you're, those are the two criteria that we actually don't allow.
So when we say we want a vanguard party of professional revolutionary cadre, we're talking about organizers who are on the front lines of labor struggles, tenant struggles,
look at him,
and so on.
It is so important that as DSA, we are developing organizers who can look at the conditions, figure out what exactly is the pressure point, what is that weak point that we can push on to help start breaking capitalism down. And it's working.
Is it? Is it working? How DSA built Zoran Mamdani's electoral machine. Look, the DSA also gave us AOC, right? This is what they do. They're very good at identifying races where they can interject with a actor who can be their vessel to take over the city and to set going the feedback loop that will destroy everything. We'll get into that on the other side. We've got New York landlords already talking about the fact that they can't afford to repair their buildings. So what's going to happen? They're going to confiscate them from the city and give them to socialist, whatever they call them, combines to run it as an NGO. But basically, they're just selling property to their DSA friends at rock bottom prices. They're literally destroying the country. I don't know what else to tell you. These are all freakish communists that have to be expelled from our political system by one form or another. Like, we can't allow these people to have a say in our government. Oh, is that undemocratic? Yeah, you bet your ass it is. Yeah, when our country's been flooded with tens of millions of foreigners, it's time to be done with the whole charade of democracy that doesn't exist anyway. We'll be back with more on the other side. Stay with us.
There has been a major full court press agenda to undermine this country, to make Americans think that it's the American Republic and our Constitution that was the apple of the world's eye. Everybody wanted to come here to be part of this, that somehow it's why America is hated around the world. It's why we've lost our liberties and our freedoms. It's why you can work 80 hours a week and still can't pay your bills. No, it's the globalists. It's the private Federal Reserve. It's the whole UNWF kleptocrats that have been financing all of the radical anti-white, anti-America, anti-Christian, anti-capitalist garbage. And it's America that stands in the way of that. That's why with Cloward and Piven, they've been undermining it to destroy it. And so that's why with the 250th anniversary approaching in just a few days, it is so important to remember that they're trying to break your will. They're trying to demoralize you. But we're talking about the next leap in the information war with the truth against the liars. I'm here at AliceJonesLive.com headquarters. We've got our backup studio, new studios getting built. It's incredible. We're planning to go 20 hours a day live with even a late night show that's going to be incredible. But we need your support to do it, and you've been coming through with the support. That's why I want to give back to you on this 250th anniversary of our Constitutional Republic and celebrate it and know that its best days are to come if we take action, if we breathe life into it. And let Big Brother globalists know that they are in trouble. They've lost the faith of the public. Their own internal documents have leaked. They know they're in crisis. They know the Great Awakening's here. They thought their Great Reset and their COVID release would get us back in line, back in heel with their boot on our neck, but it didn't work. So, running this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through the 4th of July, we are offering the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. Best-selling items. Buy one, get one free. Ultramethylene Blue, the very best. Bovine Colostrum, the very best. Shilajit, incredible. Booster Testosterone, always natural peptides. These are private labels, the best brands in the country, discounted. And up to 60% off the other supplements and 50% off on apparel. Many of these are loss leaders, but I know those of you on the fence that haven't tried some of these products, once you try Ultramethylene Blue or Bovine Colostrum or our Methylene Red that's proprietary, you're going to be hooked. There's over a 90% order rate. And you know you're financing liberty and freedom, so you cannot lose. Also, 60% off Ultimate Chill. With all these known herbs for natural, clean, calm, but you also stay focused at the same time. Ultimate Energy, supercharged energy. Methylene Red capsules that goes with Methylene Blue, like a horse and carriage. MK Ultra, Brain Booster. Ultimate Power Freedom Mango is even better than Turbo Force. Similar formula, even stronger, full of super nutrients. In Mango, Freedom Mango, and Patriot Punch. You want a cooking beef tallow? We've got the highest quality right now for you as well. Superfood Green Powder, Tallow Bomb, Mind Fuel Nootropic Energy Shot, Etrogenic Mushroom Super Coffee. I forgot about that. It is simply amazing. It's all up to 60% off. Our Zeolites, 40% off. Sea Moss Gummies, Irish Sea Moss, 40% off. It goes on and on. So up to 60% off on the supplements. Buy one, get one free on all three of our top-selling supplements. 50% off on Patriot Apparel and more Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. July 3rd, July 4th, July 5th, flash sale celebrating the birth and the continuation of this country past 250 years at thealexjonesstore.com, celebrating 250 years of America and 250 more. We are 1776. We're unstoppable together.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This story, expect more like this. Again, this isn't a bug of socialism. This is a feature. This is a constantly featured phenomenon in socialism. And whatever this mindset is, I don't know if you can call it socialism, but there's something we're defining here that characterizes all of our enemies. Because the obvious example that we always point to is Nancy Pelosi forcing everybody to stay home while she goes out and gets her hair did. Well, now you have Mamdani's City Hall had its AC cranked to frigid temperatures as New York City forced to roast with 78 degree rule. So temperatures inside New York City Hall dipped well below the level requested by Zoran Mamdani during the ongoing heat wave, with some rooms reaching as low as 54 degrees Thursday afternoon, according to on-site readings conducted by the New York Post. Temperatures outside climbed around 100 degrees in the city, including Central Park, which hit triple digits for the first time in over a decade. Despite the extreme outdoor heat, multiple interior government spaces remained noticeably cool throughout the day. Around midday, readings taken across City Hall show mixed but generally moderate conditions. The rotunda, the city council chamber, and areas near the mayor's second floor office registered around 77 degrees. The mayor's press office on the first floor came in at 78 degrees at the same time. Conditions changed later in the afternoon. By roughly 4:30 p.m., temperatures in several parts of the building had fallen further. The rotunda was recorded at 64 degrees, while areas near the press office had dropped to about 62 degrees. In one area near the mayor's office, the temperature was measured at 74 degrees. The coldest reading came from an air vent in a press radio room, which registered 54 degrees. The Manhattan Municipal Building, the city store inside the municipal building, was 64 degrees, which that's crazy. That is so cold. So, and again, why would this matter? Like, why are people sending undercover operatives with thermometers to test how cold it is in City Hall? Because Zoran Mamdani, we'll see in a video, and just say he wants to bring democracy from the ballot box into your personal life. So this is democracy. Democracy, i.e. Zoran Mamdani, decided that 78 degrees was good enough for you. So that's what you'll be stuck at. And there's already systems in place. I know because a family member of mine like accidentally signed up for one. She like didn't realize what it was exactly. And in Austin, there's a thing where the city can take control of your thermostat. And so like in the middle of summer, she's like, why is my thermostat? It keeps going up to 80. Like, why does he keep doing this? I'm so hot. And it's like, she realized that as she was signing up for electrical service, there was something that was like, would you like to save $40 a month by joining our, you know, eco-friendly club? She was like, yeah, sure. And it turns out that gives control over your thermostat to the city of Austin, and they keep it at a deeply uncomfortable, hot level. While in City Hall, it's 54 degrees. This is how socialism works, you guys. This is what it is. Do you think the rich people are keeping their houses hot? Do you think they're paying their fair share and suffering with the rest of us? No, no, no. And it always happens like this. Why? Because, well, the important, you know, activity of the state, you know, doing things like forcing everybody to keep their ACs at an uncomfortably hot temperature. I mean, that's an important thing. That's saving the world. So if they need to be a little cooler to save the world, I think that's okay. No, it's actually okay if you, you know, allow Nancy Pelosi to go get her hair done because she needs to look good to push the lockdown on everybody else. And these people working in City Hall, the work they're doing is just that important, telling everybody else to be hot. So, of course, they have to stay cool. However it's justified, this is always the outcome. Inevitable. It's inevitable. It's every single time. It's never any different. The only difference is, under socialism, the way the elite make their money is dishonestly. That's the big difference. Just as many, if not more, inequality, like rich people, you know, billionaires, that sort of stuff. Inequality always increases under socialism every single time. There's no way that it can't, because to pay for the stuff that they want, you have to rob the middle class, because the rich do not have enough money to have it all taken from them and have methods by which they conceal or shield their money from taxation in ways that are legal and necessary for a market to function at all. So you're not actually solving inequality. You're not actually solving any of that. You're just changing it from capitalism, where you at least have to, in some way, appeal to your customers. They aren't forced to buy from you, so you've got to do something to get them to buy from you. But in socialism, you don't have to serve anybody in any way. You don't have to achieve anything. You don't have to have any success whatsoever. You will still be rich. How many millionaires do you think are running around whose entire career involved dealing with the homeless problem in California? Do you think if capitalism was at all involved, people with outrageous failures under their belt would keep getting promoted and keep being given billions of dollars to achieve less than nothing? Socialism doesn't change how many billionaires there are, how many millionaires there are, or how much inequality there is. If anything, it makes it worse. What it does change fundamentally is how that money is made. Money under capitalism, while capitalism is not the end-all be-all, while capitalism is not even something I necessarily subscribe to, I think capitalism in its prototypical, you know, metaphysical form is just an inevitable consequence of freedom, but I would much prefer our government take a much harder line on monopolistic endeavors and private equity and all this crap. I hate all that. I don't even consider it capitalism. But if it is capitalism, then I don't subscribe to it. I don't actually care that much about the concept of capitalism. I do understand incentive structures. I do understand the fact that greedy people out there are going to try to get your money one way or another, and socialism just makes it to where they don't actually have to do anything for it. They don't have to achieve anything. They don't have to prove effectiveness of anything. Again, I mean, the homeless situation is the obvious one. Medical situation would be another. I mean, anything that you look to do. Now, there are some things that should not be dictated by profit, obviously, right? You don't have firefighters charging to put out fires because that would not create a good situation. That would create numerous very bad situations. So, like, okay, there are some things that the government should and must do because individually we can't do it and collectively there's no profit motive. So, okay, the government can step in and do that. However, if you're like what actually happens is, you know, firefighting is a pretty cut and dry thing. Is there a fire? Do your best to put it out. Okay, we're done. With things like homelessness or welfare or job creation or any of this stuff, it all gets a little wonky. So what you end up with is, you know, a fire station that gets $2 billion and accidentally outfitted flamethrowers instead of water hoses to their trucks. And every time they go to put out a fire, they actually spread the fire a lot more and burn a lot more stuff down. And then they get a couple more billion dollars. Like, it's so backwards. It's so nonsensical. It so doesn't make sense in any way you want to cut it. And yet we have to argue against this. We have to actually talk about this. Time and time again, you see exactly the same thing. The only people who are subject to socialist dictates are the poor and the middle class. The rich, who already have friends in government, who already have loopholes they take advantage of, they aren't destroyed by socialism. Billionaires' money isn't actually collected from socialism. They offshore it, they get around it, they donate to charity and offset the taxes, they reinvest their money so it's not included as income. It doesn't affect them. And it doesn't affect negatively the people in the government or in the system or in the NGO or some other, you know, outlet that gets money from the government. They do great. The billionaires do great. The rich do great. And everything gets worse for everybody else. 100% of the time, there's never been a contrary example. There just has never been a contrary example in all of history. So why do we have to treat them like they are talking anything that makes any sense? Mamdani Blast, Capitalism, Foreign Wars in America, 250 address, while sitting at George Washington's desk, backwards, I might add. By the way, sitting on the wrong side of the desk, which, again, I think is symbolic to all of this. The 15-minute speech which Mamdani gave while flanked by newly naturalized U.S. citizens balanced critiques with a celebration of a grand experiment in self-governance. The experiment has failed. And if this was an experiment, that would mean we could go back. So it's not really an experiment. There's no control. There's no control function. No, this is just the system that we're in. And it is proven ineffective at delivering absolutely anything of any value to anybody that deserves it. So it should be destroyed in favor of a new system that excludes people like Zoran Mamdani with prejudice, violently if necessary. The Democratic Socialist mayor elevated the plight and contributions by downtrodden Americans, slaves, Continental Army soldiers, immigrants of all types with the alleged smallness of the powerful. Smallness of the powerful. We see a city of contradictions within a nation of contradictions, he intoned. Yeah, you see a city built by capital being run by a socialist. That's a contradiction. You see a city and a nation built by white people, populated entirely by non-white people that don't believe in the systems that they're operating. That's very contradictory. That doesn't make any sense at all, actually. We see the wealthiest nation in the history of the world. How'd we get that way, Zoran? Is that a good thing? Do you understand what I mean? That, like, they don't even make sense in their own sentences. Like, they can't even... I don't even understand what they're against and what they're for. It all seems utterly meaningless and contradictory the entire time. He says we see the wealthiest nation in the history of the world. Is that a good thing? Is it a good thing that we're wealthy? How is it a good thing if nations are wealthy, but it's a bad thing that individuals are wealthy? And how does a nation become wealthy if the individuals aren't wealthy? This doesn't make any sense. He's literally just saying, you have stuff, I want it. That is the depth of his ideology. You rich, me poor, me want rich stuff. Like that, it's caveman level, preschool level understanding of how anything works. I want to know, if we're the wealthiest nation in the history of the world, which we are, how did we get that way? Is that a good thing? Do you want to preserve that? We could all just be poor. Then, you know, no contradiction, I guess. Thank goodness we got rid of all the contradictions. You know, the contradiction of having wealth and poverty existing in the same nation. That's not a contradiction. That's a status of life, permanent for all of time, nowhere excluded. How is that a contradiction? Wow, what a contradiction. The YMCA has a basketball court and a pool. No, there's just two different things existing in the same geographical area. There's nothing contradictory about that whatsoever. What he says is, children go to sleep hungry while the world's first trillionaire hungers for more. Whoa. Wow, it's like poetry. He's like such a deep thinker. See how I use the word hunger to mean two different things? It's like, whoa. I mean, it makes sense. He was a rapper. The language, you know, he's a wizard, isn't he? Children go hungry in America, which they don't. What are you talking about? Where are children going hungry in America? Where does that happen? Where does that exist? They don't. They don't, because we're the wealthiest nation in the world, because we have a robust social system, social safety net. Welfare is like too much, actually. Nobody's going hungry. Nobody's going hungry here. But do you understand? They have to have people going hungry here. If there aren't people going hungry, they'll make them up. Because their entire pitch is that America is a failed system. Otherwise, why would we want to destroy it? Why would we need something new if it turned out America was super wealthy and nobody went hungry and we had trillionaires and also our poorest were well taken care of? Like, that is the situation. In America, every child can get free food. Every child from the state or from charities. The overabundance is ridiculous. And of course, every child's parent could get a job if they wanted. If they're fit and healthy, they can get a job. There's jobs everywhere. For anybody that wants to work, they don't want to work. So there you go. In fact, I believe one out of every three men in America doesn't have a job and isn't working. That's the level of prosperity that we have. I mean, it's a very stupid way to spend our money. It's like the dumbest thing we could possibly be spending our money on is subsidizing the lives of the unproductive. But that's what we choose to do. And we're very effective at it. We're very good at it. But they need us to be bad at it. They need this place to be tyrannical. They need America to be failing to, you know, live up to its potential. We're not, but they lie and say that we are. As we've explained a million, billion, trillion times before. Just like they did in Russia before the Communist Revolution. Was the Tsar the greatest leader? Were his people universally happy, cared for? Did he never, you know, tyrannize anybody and never, you know, torture dissidents or anything? No, of course not. Of course, there were a few bad things. But compared with the communists, Tsarist Russia was like the Garden of Eden. I mean, it was like paradise. You didn't have the Gulag Archipelago. You didn't have the Holodomor. You didn't have the massacres upon massacres, the starvation. I mean, it got really bad in Russia for a really long time. And yet it got that way because prior to the Communist Revolution, you had a bunch of Zoran Mamdani types, a bunch of ingrate foreign types running around telling everybody everything was terrible. Everybody's starving. Oh, the Tsarist is this awful tyrant. Knowing the whole time the actual tyrants are lurking in the shadows, waiting to take power and make everything worse for everybody. So children do not go hungry in America. That is just not true. Don't know where you're getting that. Think you're making that up, actually. They do not go to sleep hungry. Actually, we're very good at looking after our poor. But do you notice the utter lack of gratitude in any of that? Because the lack of gratitude extends beyond himself to other people, that he can see that our system is actually the most charitable in the world, that actually we have a welfare system. If it has one problem, it's that it's not robust enough to stop the scam artists from stealing 90% of the goods that go through it, or the big corporations that benefit from it. That's the other ironic thing. That, of course, everything the socialists promote is 100% in line with the major corporatocracy. Everything. Everything, everything, from homosexuality and the Pride Month crap that gets forced down our throat through corporations, to the fact that our welfare system is just a money funnel straight from prosperous taxpayers through the ingrates to the biggest corporations in the world like Coca-Cola and Frito-Lay, the corporations that are making money off of poisoning the lower classes to keep them in a state of dependency so they can continue to siphon money out of the taxpayers. But no, tell us more, Zoran Mamdani, about how we're all going hungry, and yet we have a trillionaire. Therefore, we need socialism. It's hard to believe that this stuff is convincing, but apparently it is. We see monopolies that dominate every industry and oligarchs who buy elections. Mamdani then took aim at his texting buddy President Trump's hardline immigration crackdown and fellow billionaires, saying we see masked agents terrorizing our streets, eating food cooked by our undocumented neighbors before spiriting them away in unmarked vans. We see a nation whose immense wealth has been built by those with calloused, dirt-streaked hands, those who toil on factory floors and chisel into stone. This is the thing. Communism seems to be stuck in the early 1900s. I still hear it consistently from socialists about the means of production. What production? What means? What are you talking about? You all have email jobs. You all can be replaced with AI. So what are you talking about? The means of production. What is he? He's like dirt streak hands toiling on factory floors and chiseling into stone. It's like, yeah, 200 years before you got here. And we would love to see more manufacturing in this country. Unfortunately, our globalist overlords prefer people like you to get all of the benefit. And so it all got outsourced from America in a system of exploitation that you are actively continuing. I can imagine in America, I could even celebrate and promote a socialist America that had its same demographic makeup as prior to the Hart-Celler Act of 1965. But instead, what we have is globalism, which means that we have both imported the world to our country to work for slave labor and undercut wages and take up housing and screw up early job opportunities for teenagers because they're all given to middle-aged Indian men and women who are having their wages supplemented by welfare so that the mega corporations can benefit that much more from selling out our birthright and undercutting our way of life. You are fully in favor of all of that, sir. So what are you talking about? I feel the same way as I do about like the anti-Israel stuff that these people promote, where it's like, do you even know why you're anti-Israel? Have you even thought about it at all? Like, if you really, but they haven't. It's literally as simple as Israel white, Palestinians brown. That's as deep as they've thought of it. That's as deep as they think of anything. And so it's like, even on things I agree with them on, I'm like, but you don't understand why this is this way. You don't actually understand what you oppose. You actually are completely in favor of everything you think you're against. You think you're against the corporations. You do absolutely everything the corporations want. You think you're against the Zionist, you know, corporate construct, but you are literally puppets on their strings doing everything that could ever aid them in their attempts. You are the perfect examples for them to present to the world to say, look at how bad our enemies are. Aren't we the good guys? Everything you think you oppose, you actually support. Everything you supposedly try to fight gets infinitely worse under your policies. And I, for one, would like to live in a country where these people don't exist. That's all. That's all I want. I dream of a world where nobody has to care about politics because these people aren't here. I wouldn't have to worry about politics if it weren't for the continual threat of psychotic non-Americans coming to our country and trying to forcibly change the way that things operate, for the endless scams that are bankrupting us, for the manipulation that goes into our education system that my kids are going to have to go through. I really, really, really wish we lived in a country where none of us had to worry about any of this stuff, because the leaders that we elected actually served our interest, cared about us, and valued us and our lives, and didn't want to manipulate, control, or rob us. But we've opened the gates, and they're all here now. And apparently we can't get them out, because now they all vote. And they all vote for exactly what destroyed their countries, and guess what? It's destroying ours. Can you imagine? Can you imagine a world without democracy? Can you imagine a world where, when bad people want to abuse the population has representation that defends them against the outsider? Can you imagine a world where your leadership, your government, your politicians are not actually incentivized to try to destroy you? Because that's what democracy does. It makes it to where our leadership is not, you know, the uplifted authority with the responsibility to look after, care for, and preserve the freedoms of the people beneath them. Suddenly we become enemy army factions, and the people with the power are incentivized to use that power to try to crush our prosperity, crush our free time, crush our ability to make a change in the political system, because suddenly the people they're supposed to represent and be authorities over represent a threat to their power if they're able to gain enough influence or power or money or population to overthrow them. So instead, we're in this constant battle with a bunch of foreigners that got here yesterday, who apparently are legally allowed to steal our stuff, and we have to constantly try to fight back to stop them. This is insufferable and exhausting and unnecessary. We just need Americans to run America and to kick everybody else out. On this July 4th, I say we declare independence from the ingrates. I say we declare, we actually, you know what we need? We need to force independence on them. This is what we need. We declared independence. They want to become dependents. We need to force them to be independent, force them to live on their own and build their own country. Stop being dependent on us.
And now, our coming attractions.
I don't know about you, but I'm concerned with what's happening in this world. We have got to realize we're being conditioned on a mass scale. Start challenging this corporate slave state.
Hey, look, it's Alex Jones!
Whoa! Hey, Alex!
We love you, Alex!
I'm concerned with the structure. I'm concerned with the systems of control. Those that control my life and those that seek to control it even more.
Hey, Libtard, Rachel Maddow called. He wants his shirt back.
You, Alex, suck my d***.
What a bunch of garbage. Liberal, Democrat, conservative, Republican. It's all there to control you. Two sides of the same coin.
Two management teams getting for control the CEO job of Slavery Incorporated.
Uh-oh, Antifa speed bump. Move, bitch. Get out the way.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it. Do you got me? We're going to stand up, and we're going to be human beings. We're going to get fired up about the real things, the things that matter, creativity, and the dynamic human spirit that refuses to submit.
I want to break down the new world order!
I want freedom. That's what I want, and that's what you should want.
AlexJonesLive.com, because there is a war on for your mind. Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.